Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing. Always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true transparency pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Today we begin the final week of grading with Matt LePan.
Greg Gosell is our number one football analyst, but we're searching for his apprentice.
Assistant to the sensei, that's pretty cool.
Assistant sensei.
Now, one of 15 candidates to be our number two person joins us to talk about the NFL draft. And he better be good, because we're going to grade him after this segment. And we don't grade on a bell curve. We use the Gosell curve. Time to bring the knowledge. Oh, and some advice? Don't screw this up. You're welcome.
Hey, Matt, thanks for joining us.
First, thanks for having me along, but I heard before the break that if we might have to pay you guys off. If that's the case, you can count me out right now. I'm probably the brokest one of the bunch. But
Matt, what I love about you is that you have listened a lot to the segments around your segment on the show, which I applaud. I applaud the effort there.
Yeah, if you don't win, are our ratings taking a bump?
I'm a big fan of you guys. I was before the competition. I am now, maybe even more so. So I've had some of my friends and family up here listening to you guys, so hopefully we get the bump there. Maybe that'll push me over the edge. Is that better than payment?
We shall find out.
The payment of your knowledge has been payment enough for us, Matt. I want to start with a process question before we get going, now that you're one of the finalists here in the competition. Before you comment on a player, how much do you watch of them? What is your standard for what you want to see of a player before really commenting or writing about them?
Well, my goal is to get at least a season's worth of tape if they have it. You know, some of these guys don't have more than one season, but if it's a case like that, a minimum of 6-plus games where I try to go through and watch as much of the film as I can. I read up on what some of the local folks are saying, what their coaches are saying, all that. And then I reach out to my people as well that I know, you know, throughout the different communities. If I can get more information on a kid, I do my best to do so. There are some people that go out there and say, like, oh, you know, I watch one or two games of film and watch the games on TV. I couldn't do that. I wouldn't be confident enough to comment on these guys. I try to watch everything on TV. You know, I'm one of these people that Saturday is don't bother trying to make plans with me during college football season, because I'm watching college football all day. I'm flipping between the channels. And then at the end of the year, go back, fresh view on all these kids. And like I said, minimum 6 games, looking for closer to a season.
Matt LePan is with ProFootballCentral.com.
Do you get tape? Do you get all 22? How hard is it to get?
It's tough to get. I can get some. I have some coaches, some administrators that I've worked with over the few years that I've been doing this, that they trust me, and I can get some of that. It's tough, though. You know, if you don't have that in with some of these schools, they're pretty tight with it. They don't want to just send it to just anyone. As the years have gone on, you know, over the past 3 or 4 years, it's become easier and easier. You know, as I expand my Rolodex, to make a really antiquated term. But, you know, as some coaches move on to other schools, and I've worked with them before at a different school, I can reach out to them. All 22 is the best. I wish that there was something along the lines of the NFL Game Center for college football. It would be a game changer. But, you know, as much as I can get, I get my hands on.
Matt LePan with us. Matt, you can trade up to draft any non-quarterback in this draft. Who would it be and why?
Any non-quarterback would be Bradley Chubb. You know, it's a close call, because as a fat guy, I look at it and say, man, Quentin Nelson's going to be an all-pro, a stud for like the next 10 years. But Bradley Chubb to me is a game changer, because he's an all three downs player. He plays a run, he rushes a passer, but he doesn't get out of control. He's big, he's strong, he's fast, he's physical. I think that all of his skills translate to the NFL. And from everything I've heard from people I've talked to that have talked with him or have worked with him, some coaches, some players who have played against him. He's brilliant on the football field. He reads things so well, and you can see it when you watch him. He's not going to be found out of position. He's not going to be a guy who dips inside and gives up the edge on the outside. In the NFL, it's, you know, speed rushers make the money, but those all-around three-down players are the ones that help win championships and really coveted by coaches and personnel directors.
So where does he end up?
I think he ends up at two. I think that the Giants are either going to trade back or take him, and whoever moves up is going to take him. I don't think that we're going to see the 1-2-3 on quarterbacks, even though, you know, there's some talk that maybe Denver or even Buffalo is going to try to get up into that two spot. But I think that if the Giants are smart, they're going to stay put. They're going to take a defensive end that can replace JPP. They're going to take a guy who can be the face of their franchise on defense and build around their defense. You know, they tried the whole building on their offense and building at receiver and all that. And as we can see, they got the wrong coach. They had the wrong mix of players. It was a disaster. Build from the front back. Get a player that's going to play for you, be dominant for you. Take him at two. Trade back into the end of the first round if you need to, or get a guy like Mason Rudolph at the top of the second.
This draft sure seems to look to lack elite wide receivers and elite speed in wide receivers. How do we explain that if the cornerback speed coming out is better? Have cornerbacks in football been in college football been outrunning receivers lately?
Yeah, it seems that way. You know, you look at some of these guys, not only their 40 times, which, you know, some of these receivers, you look at guys like Cortland Sutton, who's my number one receiver, James Washington, who's my number five receiver. Then you look at, you know, popular names, Michael Gallup, Marcel Aitman, they all went over 4.5. For a receiver, that's not fast anymore. You know, some of the elite speed receivers are running down the 4.3s, low 4.4s, and you look at a guy like Calvin Ridley, who, you know, he's a little older and people had questions about him. He still ran in the mid 4.5s. You look at DJ Moore, who's been a big riser, ran in the high 4.4s. These guys are going to be the ones that kind of catch the eyes of teams because speed has been the thing. And then you look at these defensive backs, some of the top defensive backs, Jaire Alexander, Denzel Ward, Minkah Fitzpatrick, even Derwin James, who's a safety, all ran under 4.5. When you get a safety running faster than a guy who's supposed to be your prototypical outside, your X receiver, that's a problem for receivers. And I remember last year, I was watching the combine at home, and I saw a tweet come across, and it was from Aqib Talib, and he said, "Man, these receivers are slow. Time for me to make my money." He's still got that speed, and he's been a veteran in the NFL, and, you know, speed kills. If you can get over the top of a receiver and you can get a defense out of its system, that's when there's problems, especially if you got a safety that has to range over to one side. You hit him with a tight end with some of these athletic tight ends. I think that speed's becoming a big problem at the receiver position. So many of these guys went to the big body that now they're losing their speed.
Matt, we had this discussion earlier of Matt LaFleur's offense and what they did with the Rams and the need for that explosive, over-the-top speedster at wide receiver in his offense, a Sammy Watkins type. Can you specifically give us a Sammy Watkins, Brandon Cooks type of receiver that the Titans could possibly take in this draft?
Well, I don't know if he's going to be available to the Titans, but a guy I just mentioned, DJ Moore, he's fast and he runs really good routes. The name to keep an eye out on, going into the year, he was really highly rated, fell off because of some injury concerns and all that, Deion Kane out of Clemson. He's a burner. He can get over the top, and he can really do some things in the open field. Excuse me. Sorry about that, guys. But you look at guys like that, and the name that's been on the rise is DJ Chark from LSU. Tremendous 40, low 4.3s at the combine. He's the guy who I think is going to go a little too high. I don't think he's a great receiver, but he's going to go up because of his speed. I could see the Titans maybe in the middle of the second snag him.
You mentioned Cortland Sutton from SMU as your number one wideout. He was a safety in high school. I'm sure he played both sides of the ball, but Rivals has him mentioned as a three-star safety. Turns into a wide receiver in college. And although I believe he primarily was the X receiver in SMU's offense, am I right in thinking, Matt, that he lined up all over the place?
He didn't. So, you know, I'm a little partial to Cortland Sutton because I worked with him a lot this year, interviewed him weekly. He lined up everywhere. He'd line up in the slot, run out routes. He'd line up in the slot, cut across the field. As an X, he's not going to burn by you, but he has tremendous ball skills. He goes up and he snatches the ball away from defensive backs, and he hardly drops anything. I can remember two drops during the year, and they were both shocking to see a drop out of him. And for Court, what he struggles with is not having that elite speed, but he makes up for it with he's got great strides and he's got a great get-off on the line of scrimmage. So he gets on a on a defensive back really quick. He eats up that cushion. You know, if somebody's playing off man, he eats up that cushion in about two to three steps, as opposed to some guys who take 4 to 5. And that 1 or 2 steps is the difference of cutting across the middle of the field and being in front of the safety, or cutting across the middle of the field and not being open. I think that his route running needs a little polish, but he can line up anywhere on the field and he can win from anywhere on the field. And he's one of the best competitors I've talked to. Every day is just another day. He's relentless. He's in the weight room. He's in the film room. He's working with coaches. He spent a lot of this offseason working with some of his old receiver coaches, Justin Stepp, who moved on to Arkansas. He spent a lot of time with him to hone his craft, get better at studying film, learn how to run routes better. I think that he's a guy who's going to come into the NFL, might not be an all-pro, but he's going to be a good wide receiver. He's going to be a good X-wide receiver for somebody and help them win for a long time.
Let's stick with the X-receivers. You mentioned Deion Kane from Clemson. He's a one-year starter there because he took over the starting role that Mike Williams left available when he left for the draft. How did Kane fill that role for Clemson?
Probably not as well as he wanted to. And I think that's why he fell so far in a lot of people's eyes. You looked at before the season, he was being mentioned up there with guys like Ridley, guys like Sutton, as one of the top 1 or 2 wide receivers. He didn't quite jump onto the scene like he should have. I think he was a little tentative early in the season. I think that, you know, there were times where he got a little lazy. And so it's the last thing you want out of your outside receiver. But as the year went on, I think he was challenged more and more, and that allowed him to step up his game. And I think that by the end of the year, he's now undervalued as maybe a third or fourth wide receiver to some people.
We know Quentin Nelson is almost universally hailed as the best offensive lineman in this draft. Is he symbolic of a field where interior guys maybe are better than perimeter guys, which is usually a rare thing?
Well, this year it's undoubtedly true. You look at some of these interior guys, you look at obviously Nelson, like you said, Isaiah Wynn going from being an undersized left tackle to probably bumping inside to guard is a great move for some NFL team. Will Hernandez is your prototypical guard that you think of. Shorter, stockier, but mean, aggressive. Then guys like Billy Price, James Daniels, and a forgotten name is Frank Ragnow. Big-time starting center in the SEC. And then you look at the outside. It's Connor Williams, who has some questions about his size. Mike McGlinchey, who has some questions about his power. Chuck Okorafor, who, small school, is he a left tackle? Is he a right tackle? Where team's going to put him? Then you get into Orlando Brown, who, from everything I've heard, teams are very down on him because he didn't prepare well for the offseason process. Obviously, we all saw the combine. His pro day wasn't much better. The numbers were better, but from what I'm hearing, he wasn't much better in the eyes of scouts, in the eyes of teams. And, you know, you look at the interior guys, you're talking Nelson, Wynn, and Price, to me, are locks to go in the first round. Hernandez and Daniels more than likely will go in the first round, maybe the first 35 picks. For tackles, Williams and McGlinchey, both I think should go, but I wouldn't be shocked if one of them fell out of the first round. When was the last time you can remember a draft where offensive tackle only had one guy go in the first round? Even last year had two, That was probably the weakest tackle class I've scouted in my time working with, you know, the draft. This year takes to a new level. I think that, you know, you have starters in McGlinchey and Williams, but they're not immediate starters. And then the rest of the class is weak at best. I think that a lot of guys are going to be overdrafted because of the position, but the interior line, much more impressive, much more NFL ready. And you look at last year, some of the guys that stepped in, whether it was a Dan Feeney, a Pat Elflein in Minnesota, you look at these guys and they step in and they're NFL starters on winning teams immediately. I don't see that out of the tackle class really last year or this year. Ryan Ramczyk was pretty good. He played all the games, but he was drafted to be a left tackle, went to right. I just don't know if this tackle class is ready to be in the NFL like the interior linemen are.
Well, and when you're watching offensive line play, is it more difficult to evaluate tackles as opposed to guards when you're looking at them? And is this a one-year anomaly? Because it does seem odd with the direction of college football and where it's headed. You usually have a lot more tackle bodies and tackle-ready type players as opposed to interior offensive linemen with what NFL offenses want. Is this a one-year anomaly, or is this interior offensive lineman group that we've seen this year, is this a trend of something to come?
I think it's a trend of something to come. You look at what the NFL needs, and that's kind of what dictates what a lot of college football players do. Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh, Geno Atkins, guys like that, you know, they have dictated that, yes, there are edge rushers, but you can scheme that up. If a guy gets pressure on the interior, you know, I'm up here in New England. The blueprint to beat Tom Brady is get interior pressure. The blueprint to beat Peyton Manning when he was in the NFL was get interior pressure, because if they can't step up into a clean pocket, they're not as effective. Both those guys obviously still good. But like I said, last year it kind of started to turn this way where the guys didn't quite go as high, but the interior guys were more NFL ready and they made a bigger impact. This year they're going to go high. And when you look at next year's class, there's no real clear-cut number one tackle. Obviously, it's way too early to make too many rankings, but just the initial looks, the interior linemen look more ready. Their game is more progressed to what they're going to need in the NFL, as opposed to tackles where, in this spread system, you know, your blocking is a little bit easier. You're asked to have fewer assignments. And then you get into the NFL and you're getting overload blitzes coming off of a right tackle, and the tackle has to make a split-second decision on which guy to take, which guy to pass off. Is this guy going inside? Do I follow him? Do I let this guy free? And in the NFL, where the speed is so much quicker, if you make that quarter of a second delay as an offensive tackle, your quarterback's getting killed, or he's on the run. From the inside, you can make a little bit of a mistake because it's more of a jumble, but if you have the power and you have the footwork, you're ready to play in the NFL, as opposed to tackle, where you need the entire package. Otherwise, you're going to get beat and beat off.
Give us an edge rusher that you think this team could get behind Derek Morgan and Brian Arakpo. Maybe he's not immediate impact guy because it seems hard to find one even at 25, but that maybe could be a long-term solution for Vrabel and Pease.
Well, I think the ideal would be if Harold Landry fell or if they could move up and get him. Harold Landry's a stud speed rusher. He had a bad year at Boston College because of some ankle injuries. I'm hearing he's probably going to go higher and higher now as he works out and he interviews with teams. They're becoming very impressed with him. If you want to look at kind of a later round guy, a guy who was supposed to be great in college, never quite developed, but I could see Mike Vrabel getting his hands on him and really teaching him the game's Lorenzo Carter at Georgia. Big body, long arms, athletic, was a four-star recruit, I believe, coming out of high school. Never really put together at Georgia. He was fine. You know, he wasn't bad by any stretch. But as a guy who can come into the NFL and kind of change his game to more of that speed to power, and just learn to use his hands correctly. And if there's a coach to show you how to use their hands correctly and how to get the most out of all of your athletic traits, it's Mike Vrabel. I got a good look at him growing up watching the Patriots. What he was able to do beating bigger linemen getting his hands in the right spot, converting his speed to power. If Carter can learn how to do that as a mid-round pick, he would be a perfect fit. And he has a little bit of coverage skills. So in that zone blitzing kind of scheme that Tennessee has run, he can drop back a little bit, cover his zone, and not be completely out of his element.
You think the athleticism and his length will have him overdrafted a bit, speaking of Carter?
A little bit. I think he may go at the end of the second, early third, when I think he's more of a late third, early fourth in my eyes. I don't think it's a crazy overdraft, though. It's not like he's going to go at the end of the first or beginning of the second. I think he's going to go about half a round to a round too high for my liking. But as we all know, the NFL loves the guy that looks the part. And if there's anyone that looks the part, it's Carter. He's got the build. He's got the speed. He's got the length. You'd love him if you were to make a player in Madden. You would make him look like Lorenzo Carter. You just wanted to play a little more.
Are you buying the hype around Darius Leonard from South Carolina State?
Nope, I am not. I think that, unfortunately, his tape didn't show enough dominance. I don't think it showed enough speed. I don't think it showed enough playmaking. He's not playing against elite competition. So for the hype that's coming out of there, I think he's going to be overdrafted from what it sounds like, because I don't see him as even really a second-round player. I see him as a developmental project. I think that he's going to have to be a guy who gets more power out of everything. I mean, he just doesn't use his legs well. He kind of comes in straight-legged, and when you do that in the NFL, you're going to get beat.
Matt LePan has been our guest, first of three finalists this week. Matt, thank you for the time, man. We'll be in touch.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys. And thank you to everyone who's reached out. And thank you guys for making me a finalist. I've really enjoyed this. And like I said, I was a fan before, and I'm an even bigger fan now.
Life-changing, we're sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Matt.
Thanks, guys.
Matt is online. You can read his work, profootballcentral.com.
Very good information.